What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Life at Disney podcast. Here, we pull back the curtain and give you a peek into the magic of working at the Walt Disney Company. And I am Cassie, your host for this episode. This week, we're diving into the magical world of games with two guests from our Disney consumer products teams within our Disney Experiences business. Our first guest, Brian, is a product development associate manager with Marvel Games. As a lifelong Marvel fan and avid gamer, not only is he able to bring two of his passions together, he is also a huge champion for accessibility and inclusivity within the industry. All right, y'all, let's get into it. Hey, Brian, it's so good to see you again. I'm so excited for this episode. You know, I'm a huge fan of Marvel, you know, so we had to come prepared. Wear our Marvel gear today.
Absolutely.
You know, be prepared. Yes. And that shirt, I would say, it looks awesome. Can we get a close up? I see a few characters on there.
So we've got like Spider-Man, we've got Captain America, Black Panther, Iron Man, a couple Black Widows all over the place. It's really awesome. I love it.
I love it. But as you know, as I said earlier, I'm a huge fan of Marvel. I know you are, and you probably have one of the coolest jobs at the company. I'm doing my best not to geek out over here, but can you tell us a little bit more about what you do in your role and how you got to Disney?
I've been with the Disney, or I guess in this case, Marvel Games team for about a year and a half now. And to be honest, I've been wanting this job for as long as I can remember. The first time I saw it, I knew that I needed to be a part of this team. So I've been in the industry for quite a while, but I've been wanting to make sure that I could gain the skills to join. And thankfully it lucked out because I'm here now. But with the Marvel Games team, a lot of what I do is, I mean, it's in the name. I work with Marvel and I work on games. So like Marvel Spider-Man 2 that came out recently, Marvel Snap, a couple of other titles that we worked on. But a big part of my role is I just work with a bunch of external collaborators to make the most authentic and enjoyable games possible.
It honestly sounds like a dream job, any gamer's dream job, really. So tell us, what does your day-to-day look like? What does that mean, actually, to collaborate with the external and internal here at Marvel Games?
Yeah, so we've got quite a few teams that we work with all over the globe, but the Marvel Games team internally is about 23 people. So the day-to-day kind of looks like a few of us are split between different teams. So we have some people working on what are called the franchise titles, like Spider-Man 2, or we've got some people working on our mobile titles. I personally work on the franchise titles. And my job, like I mentioned, revolves around collaborating with these external teams to create these games and make sure that they are authentic to the characters. So for instance, using Spider-Man as an example, a lot of the job revolves around reading comic books and making sure that we're caught up on what's new with these characters, but we're also the experts on them. So when the developers come to us and they have these ideas of what they would like to do in the game and what would be fun to them, we come back to them and tell them like, yes, this is authentic to the character, or no, maybe we try something else. Look at this example. So it's really cool because we get to bring that knowledge and that passion for these characters to these titles.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're like an ambassador, protector of the brand over its authenticity and things like that. So what, I guess, made you want to be in a role like this? Like what, do you have a personal connection? I can imagine you do, right? Because I see you might have to do a little desk tour, but I also see all the cool stuff, all the merch on your desk as well. But what led you to this career?
Like you mentioned, I love Disney. I love Marvel. I love anything under the Disney umbrella, Star Wars, Marvel, all of it. Literally from the earliest memory I have, I can remember being obsessed with all things Disney. The first picture that I remember that my mother still has is me wearing a Mickey Mouse like pair of pajamas, laying down on like a Donald Duck blanket that she made herself while my older brother's reading me like a pop-up picture book of Snow White, like the Disney version. So like literally from that moment, I was barely a couple months old. I was already a Disney fan. And even like on top of that, in the game space specifically, the very first video game I can remember playing was The Lion King on Super Nintendo. So literally every core memory I could think of that formulated my love for these unique stories were all from Disney as a child. So I knew from then, like, I always wanted to work on something as cool as this. And when, you know, games started becoming more and more prominent in the industry and they became more than just a hobby and they were something that could actually be a career, I figured, why not go for it? I mean, games are my favorite hobby. I love playing them all the time, but they're also a great like escape. They're a great way to relieve stress. So I wanted to be a part of that. And there are a lot of games out there that are more than just like a fun, enjoyable experience. They're art. They have amazing stories. And you could see it right here. I have figures from Kingdom Hearts, which is a Disney game. And that is my favorite game of all time. I mean, I loved being able to visit different Disney worlds. Like that was a dream as a kid, right? To go visit Disney worlds. Having that in a video game form was just amazing. And the story revolving around the power of friendship was just really important to me. I mean, that game came out when I was 9. So that was like the perfect time for me to experience this. And from that moment, I was like, I have to do this. This is just the perfect thing for me.
How cool is it now that you're creating the games that kids are now going to play? And of course, adults, right? I mean, you're now in this space, in this career where you're creating this next generation of games, content, art that kids will be growing up with, referencing down the line. How does that feel?
Honestly, I'm still waiting for the moment to wake up. It feels great. I mean, it's a dream. It is the dream. I mean, I've always wanted to work on games, and I never would have thought I'd work on Disney games, let alone Marvel games. So even now, seeing my name in the credits of Marvel Spider-Man 2 still blows my mind. I mean, it's a dream come true, and getting texts from people or emails from people all the time that are like, oh, I'm playing Spider-Man 2 and it's so great. Like it's just surreal.
Yeah. Oh my God. I just got like goosebumps as you were talking, right? And it's so cool, like how your role, it's really a passion you've had, you know, since you were young and transitioned to career. And now you're impacting and creating new stories. So what are some of the exciting, like new stories you can tell us about that might be coming up at Marvel Games? Only what you're allowed to say. I know Marvel's very serious about, you know, keeping things under wraps, but we'd love to hear some.
A couple titles that we're in the process of working on that we announced not too long ago. We're working on a game featuring Iron Man with the EA team, as well as a game featuring Black Panther with the EA team as well. And those are going very well, and we're very excited to work with those teams.
Oh my gosh. Well, I won't push it. I try to get more out of you, but I would say that is very exciting to hear. And I know, you know, before you mentioned to me that you have a very unique and personal connection to Marvel characters and this gaming industry. Tell us a little bit more about that.
My personal connection is honestly pretty wild. I mean, like I mentioned before, I've been reading Marvel and growing up with Disney and those types of characters for my entire life. But Marvel specifically, I've been obsessed with since the 90s. I mean, the first time I ever saw the Spider-Man cartoon in the 90s, I absolutely loved it. But I've been reading comics and watching the films all the time. I don't know if this is something I should be proud of, but I've never missed a single first showing of an MCU film since the first Iron Man. When it was originally only a midnight showing, I'd go to every midnight showing. And then now that it's like Thursday night at 6, I've never missed a single one to this day. And it's been, what, 12, 13 years now? So it's more than that. But what really drew me to the Marvel characters were just how relatable they are. I mean, I love Spider-Man, like I said, but there's also a huge connection I have with the Winter Soldier. I mean, you can't really tell on camera, but I wear a prosthetic left arm. I mean, I can show it right here. And I didn't really see a lot of characters in media at the time with prosthetics, let alone a prosthetic that wasn't like a major enhancement for their well-being or whatever. You will see characters in media with prosthetic limbs and they get these crazy superpowers with them. Whereas like Bucky Barnes, he had the prosthetic and he got superpowers, but they aren't related. So it was really cool to kind of have that visibility there. Marvel has been a huge inspiration for me throughout that. And it's just cool to see myself on this side of that wall now. Again, I know I mentioned this already before, but it's still surreal. And I'm waiting for that moment that I like wake up from this dream.
When you were talking about that and talking about your journey and how it was always a part of your growing up, and, you know, we talk about gaming and how accessibility is still very new. And it's so cool to know that you're a part of this creation. You can bring that unique lens. Can you tell us a little bit more about your involvement and creating more accessibility for gamers out there?
Yeah, so accessibility in games is incredibly important to me. I mean, for personal reasons, wearing the prosthetic arm, but also just because I know so many people that would love to get into games and still to this day can't. So I really wanted to help find a way to make these games accessible to other people because I personally needed them in my life. Like, they were a huge boon for me and like my self-esteem and my way of living. Like, I really needed these games to help me through a lot as a kid, and it got to a point where I couldn't play them. So I was like, this is a problem. I'm a full-grown adult and I still meet people that struggle with games. I'm happy to be able to work with different teams, and there are amazing teams out there. Like, it's not a one-person thing. There are teams all over the industry that have this top of mind that really want to make sure people like me and people with disabilities much different than mine can all play in a way that's comfortable to them. It's not us having to find a way to adapt to whatever we want to play. It's the games adapting to how we need to play.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. And you know, at Disney, I really feel like inclusivity is a big thing, right? Everyone's so passionate about it. I feel like we have our day jobs, right? But through it all, we're all champions of inclusivity. And I would love to hear more about how you're able to impact accessibility at Marvel. How has the company supported you in that journey to increase accessibility?
So the Marvel Games team specifically supported me in this journey from the start. Like, as soon as I told them accessibility was important to me, they were like, that's amazing. We want to link you up with every team we're working with so that you can chat with them about it. And using Spider-Man 2 as an example again, my colleague Eric connected me with the Insomniac team on that, and we got to chat multiple times on what they were doing for their accessibility efforts. And it was just really awesome to hear their thought process and to just see how much love and passion they had for people like me in these games and making sure that they could play them. And again, it's not just the Insomniac team. It's all of our partners, and it's so many different collaborators all over the globe. So being able to chat with them, and not only just having the opportunity to chat with them, but being encouraged by the Marvel Games team and the Disney teams to chat with them and give them my unique experience so that we can make sure people with similar or different experiences can all have the same level of fun is just, it's amazing. I love it.
Right. Oh my gosh. No, I mean, it starts somewhere, right? And you're in the right place, you're on the right team. We talk a lot about right place, right time with Disney, right? And how you can create these moments of magic. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about also Disney 100, celebrating just 100 years of amazing creativity, content, and stories. What would you love to see in the next 100 years with Disney?
I think in the next 100 years of Disney, I would just love to see more inclusivity. And that's not to say there hasn't been, because I think in the past 10 years, 20 years, there's been so much inclusivity in Disney stories. I would just like to see that trend continue and grow. I'm excited that we have characters of all different backgrounds as the leads in all these different stories. But on a personal level, I'd love to see people with disabilities. I'd love to see them, whether it's live action or animated, I'd love to see them get the spotlight, but not in a way that portrays them as negative or needing help or something. I just want us to be seen in more stories.
Definitely. I so agree with that. You know, Brian, if you don't mind me asking, I'd love to hear more about your personal accessibility journey. And you talked a lot about your prosthetic that you wear. I'd love to hear about that personal story.
Like I mentioned before, I've been wearing a prosthesis, or I was born without my arm. So I've been wearing a prosthesis for almost my entire life. According to my parents, I got fit for my first one when I was 3 months old. So now I am over 30. So it's been over 30 years now that I've been wearing a prosthesis. And it's second nature to me at this point. It's really cool having the accessibility to this peripheral, because there are things that, you know, the world is built for able-bodied people. So there are things that I can't do without it. So it's great to be able to have that help. But on the flip side, because I was born without my arm, like I mentioned before with the gaming, a lot of things just seem natural to me. It's not like I lost the arm and I had to relearn a lot of things. This is just how everything's been for me. So it's been great having the peripheral for when I need it, but I feel like I've come to a point in my life where I could do things either with or without it. But even so, it brings that unique experience because I could talk from both sides of it. Hey, this is what helps with it on, this is what helps with it off. And a lot of people really love to get that feedback from me because, again, it's been a long time of me wearing these things. I've gone from wearing what's called a passive arm, which is a prosthesis that has a cable that runs from the top of the hand all the way back to like a strap that I would wear on my other arm. And in order to make it open and close, I would have to move my arm forward and back. So it's come a long way to what I have now, which is a fully mechanical prosthesis that runs on batteries. And I just kind of open and close using the muscles in my forearm, and I can make it do a bunch of different things. And it's crazy. It's not to a point in our lives where you could just kind of do this, but how far these things have come in the past even 10 years has been astounding.
That is so cool. And thank you for sharing that story. I know it's a very personal thing, and I love that it allowed for you to have a deeper connection with Marvel and now be a champion for accessibility, for the company overall. What would you say is your biggest lesson working for Disney so far?
What I would say has been my biggest learning, I guess, for being here. And I'll preface this by saying I came from different companies where a lot of what I had to do required quick turnarounds and getting things out the door really quick so that we can get updates out to players or what have you. And what I've learned here is that with the Marvel Games team, as a specific example, people want to take their time with these reviews. And that is an amazing thing because that means we are able to be our most authentic self with all these. We could bring all our passion to these titles. And instead of being like, okay, we're going to get this out the door so that people can play it as fast as possible, we're like, no, we want to make sure that this is the best experience people are going to have. Again, I'll use Spider-Man as an example. Like, this is going to be the best experience people are going to have with Spider-Man because we are going to bring all of our love, all of our passion, and take the time that is needed to make this the best thing ever. And that has honestly been a learning curve for me because every time we get something to review, I'm like, okay, reviewed, send it out, reviewed, send it out. And they're like, no, take your time. Like, really give us your thoughts. We know you love these characters, so give us your genuine thoughts, put all your heart into this because we want people to really feel that. And it's been awesome.
Yeah, I love it. So, Brian, I'll say I've been so inspired by this whole conversation and how, it sounds like the stars aligned to get where you are today. And it's like from a young age, it was kind of things were placed in your path to eventually lead you to Marvel Games here. What advice would you give to other aspiring gamers out there looking to follow in your footsteps?
The advice I'd give, first of all, is know that it's a very competitive field. I mean, especially now, there's a lot going on with the games industry that could be disheartening. But regardless of that, I would say keep at it. I think, as obvious as that sounds, keep at it is the best advice I would give. Like, find the thing that you are passionate about, whether it's, a cast of characters, whether it's art, whether it's design. Find those things that you're passionate about and build your skills in that thing and keep at it. Go places to network with people, show them how passionate you are, help others when you can, and just don't give up. Because as I've learned in my time in the industry, having that passion and that love for what you're doing takes you a much further way than just having these skills. Like, take what you find, show that passion, reach out to people in a professional way, and help others in a way that helps them and helps you grow so that you can find your best way to collaborate and to work on these teams because collaboration is key, passion is key, and you really need those to continue to grow. I know a lot of people think that they just need to play a lot of games, they need to code. Like, a lot of younger kids think that they need to know those two things. And that's a small percentage of it. If that's really what you want to do, then sure. But I think you need to find what you're most passionate about and pursue that above all.
I love that. Passion above all. Pursue passion above all. I hope we have time for this. I would love to do just some rapid fire Marvel questions based on your personal opinions.
Okay.
And we'll start off like really easy, really chill. Who is your favorite Marvel superhero?
Okay, I have two, if that's okay. The first one might be a little obvious, and that's the Winter Soldier, like I mentioned, because I love the visibility and the personal connection with the prosthetic arms. But the other one, which I might say could also be obvious, is Miles Morales, a Spider-Man. I've loved Spider-Man forever, but when Miles Morales became his own superhero, it meant so much more to me. I come from a very diverse background. My mom's Puerto Rican and she was born and raised in New York. So I have that connection with like Rio Morales. My dad's Afro-Latino. So it's like I feel that connection and that dynamic between Miles and his parents. So it was just really cool to see that. And the way that he's evolved over time and has grown into more than just what people would consider a smaller Spider-Man story. I mean, he's got these fantastic films that have come out. He's been in the Spider-Man video games. It's just cool to see him becoming his own Spider-Man.
Next Marvel question. Okay, I'm going to go on the opposite end. Who is your favorite Marvel villain?
Ooh, okay. I think that's a tougher one to answer. I could say the obvious things and just jump into the Spider-Man pantheon and say like Venom. But I also, outside of Venom, I really love Doctor Doom. I think he is absolutely terrifying. And he's got a unique story where he's not just hell-bent on, you know, he does want revenge. He does want destruction. But he's also like this very powerful mind. He's very smart. He's one of the smartest people in the Marvel Universe. And he uses that as his like strongest weapon. And I think it's super cool. And you have just a whole bunch of villains and all sorts of media that have powers and they use their powers to, you know, pick on the little guy. But he has powers and he also has this strong mind. And that just makes him way more terrifying than I think any other villain.
Marvel, I feel like, makes amazing villains. When you think about it, it's like, yeah, superpowers are one thing, but if someone's like smart and strategic, that's terrifying, right? But that makes him so cool. So who's your favorite Marvel duo?
I love Peter and Miles as a duo. I love Miles and Gwen as a duo. I love Cap and Bucky. Honestly, my favorite duo is one that I feel like I haven't seen yet, but I really want to see, if I can say that. I really want to see a duo of the Winter Soldier and Squirrel Girl because their personalities are so wildly different that I just feel like them going on adventures would be the funniest thing ever.
But that is a cool one. And so, you know, aside from duos, who would you want to be friends with in real life, if you could be?
Oh, Squirrel Girl, 100%. I love Squirrel Girl. She's hilarious, and I just think she's cool. I think she's like very smart and cool, and she just seems very down to earth. And I mean, she has a best friend that's a squirrel. I mean, who wouldn't want to hang out with somebody who has a squirrel as a friend?
Is there a tool, if that's the right term? You know, they all have like spears, a shield, or the hammer, right? If you could choose one to be yours, which one would you choose?
I would probably say Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, because it's more than just a weapon. It's proof that you are worthy and strong enough to wield this power. And I think being able to use that would be a great reminder that, like, hey, you're on the right path, you're doing the right thing. And I think that's more than just having the power. It's having, this might be cliche, but going to the very famous Spider-Man line, with great power, there must also be responsibility. So it's like, that's a great representation of that as outside of Spider-Man. I think wielding Mjolnir shows that you have power, but you also have the responsibility to wield it properly and to be worthy of it.
In all the comics or the movies or the shows that you've seen, right? Whose departure would you undo? Which character's departure would you undo if you had the choice?
The first name that came in my head was Gwen Stacy, but I feel like her story is way too important for Peter Parker and like who he is as a character. I mean, I think one of my favorite comics of all time is Spider-Man Blue, which is a story about Peter reminiscing on Gwen and like her death and how that affected him. And he does it every year on the anniversary of her death. He records like a message to her on a tape recorder. And it's like very sad, but it's important to his character.
That's a good one. I felt that one. inside. Like, I totally get what you're saying, by like, oh, we could undo that. But at the same time, it adds to the story and it makes Peter Parker who he is. Well, and on a fun one, right? Because I feel like I took us to like a very sentimental place, and I appreciate you going there with me, you know, on that. But of all the now Marvel content out there, I know you love Spider-Man, right? I know the games, everything, clearly. But what would you say outside, I'm sure we take it outside of the Marvel universe, what is your favorite, I guess, Disney movie or character?
My favorite thing from Disney is Kingdom Hearts. I know I mentioned that earlier. It's my favorite video game of all time. It's the reason I wanted to go into video games as a profession. And my favorite character from that would be Riku, who's this little figure here with the gray hair you see. And he's not the main character. The main character is actually Sora right next to him. But what really hit me with this character, Riku, is he's the best friend character. And he always had a bit of like jealousy towards Sora because Sora was the one that, you know, got chosen to go on this great journey and to do all these great things. And Riku, while being the older and the stronger one, did not get that choice. And in the first game, he kind of goes down this dark path and has to redeem himself later. And throughout the series, he grows into what I feel like is one of the best told characters ever. I mean, he goes on this dark path, he comes out on the other side, and he grows to be even more powerful than Sora, but he uses his power for good and to protect his friends and to support them in the best way that he can, because he realizes that he doesn't have to be the best one. He just has to be part of the team and supporting his friends and doing what needs to be done. And I think that path is like what I strive for myself. Like, I don't want to be the best one, so to speak, of my friends, but I want to be able to support them in any way that I can. And sure, when I was younger, I was jealous of my friends for various reasons. And now I feel like I don't need that jealousy. I can just be there for them and continue to grow to be the best version of myself I can be for me and for them. And I think he is one of the best, if not the best example of that.
Oh my gosh, Brian. Honestly, so many things you said resonated with me. 100. I could probably talk to you for hours about this. Thank you so much for sharing your personal story, the connections. I will say personally, I still think you're probably like, you should be number one Marvel fan. You know so much of the actual, like the stories. There were deep cuts you threw out there to us, your connection. Thank you for just sharing all that with us. I'm so excited that we were able to do this and looking forward to seeing what else Marvel Games has in store. So thank you for making the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to be here.
You just heard from Brian, Product Development Associate Manager. I had so much fun talking with him about his passion for game accessibility and all things Marvel. But we are just getting started on the game talk. Our next guest, Kelsey, is a producer with Disney and Pixar games. She helped to launch some fan favorites, such as Disney Illusion Island and Disney Dreamlight Valley. With her expertise in augmented reality and virtual reality, she uses her passion for storytelling and technology to push clear boundaries and bring these products to life. Welcome to the show, Kelsey. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's really good to be a part of this, Cassie, and it's good to talk with you.
Well, I'm so excited. As you know, I do love games myself. And Kelsey, you have one of the coolest jobs here at Disney. Can you tell us a little bit more about what brought you the company and how you got into this role?
It's been an interesting journey. So I'll start back in college. I studied animation in college. And so for me, after you learn about animation and how it works, you know, Disney was just always a dream to work here. I also grew up with a Disney IP, Disney movies, back when it was VHS. So all of that was part of who I was growing up. And so just wanting to work for Disney has always been a dream of mine. And so I took quite a few twists and turns, and I knew I always wanted to become a producer after college. I studied animation, but then I realized that animating wasn't really for me. But personally, it was just, I kept getting carpal tunnel. And so it was a lot of pain on my wrists and my hands and shoulders. And so a lot of that work, I just feared that I wouldn't be able to last doing, you know, 20, 30 years of animating. But I really liked producing and found that out because I was doing a little bit of event organization. I was part of a club on campus and just kept trying to move in that direction. I'll say that I've been really lucky with some of the opportunities. Early on, my career is a little bit more challenging. And then a job posting opened up about 3 years ago. It was actually for the 20th Century Games team. And then as I was interviewing, they said, oh, we're also looking for one for the Disney Pixar Games team. And so I interviewed for both positions, and I guess I did well in the interview and got hired on. And so I like to say that it took me 10 years after graduating to get to Disney, but it was worth it.
Look, we keep saying this meant for you, it will be meant for you. So we're so glad you're here. And I heard you talking about how, you know, in college, you said animation, you realized long term, this is not going to work out. And you liked organizing and producing. What brought you from animation then deciding, oh, you know, I want to go into games production and producing that type of content?
With animating, there's the beauty of it is the content, right? The content, the art, there's so many aspects that go into animation. There's the technicality to it. There is the art to it. There's creativity. So there's so many things that you can apply into that one medium itself. And in terms of doing that, I was working with students who were really passionate. My other classmates, really passionate. I didn't find myself having the same passion towards that craft. I loved art, but I wasn't passionate as a craftsman within that field. And with doing some of the organization, I felt happier doing that. I love supporting people to move forward within the craft. So knowing that you have a passion for this, I knew that I could, and I wanted to, was to create a runway for that. I love making things and setting things up so that you guys didn't have to worry about it or they didn't have to worry about it. And from very small aspect, just where I started in college that got me interested was just, it was just the club stuff, right? Like, how can I set up some life drawing sessions so people can come over and hang out? And it was all of those different activities, bringing people together. I love the social aspect. I love the team building. And all of that really drew me towards, is this a job I could be doing after college instead? And when within the entertainment industry, that's kind of production. And then there's just many different fields of it. For games specifically, I think I've been moving more towards animation and trying for film. I was in Hollywood for a little bit, but more in like production financing. And I got really lucky in about, I think 2016, I was hired as a production coordinator. I said, all right, let's do this. Like, I've been trying really hard for this, and doing the work, falling to the role, it just felt right. And what we did at the previous companies, we worked with a lot of emerging technology, so AR, VR, and a really great crossroads to be, because it's new technology, emerging technology, with also trying to maintain art fidelity. And that means I got to dabble in all parts of it and be really around amazing talent, amazing designers, engineers, artists. You know, my leadership was also really fantastic. And so being part of that, I got to learn so much of what it's like to build something. Why games, right? So I've always enjoyed playing games. I've played PC games. There's been different Disney games that I grew up with. I ended up being really focused on mobile gaming because that was the way that I would relax. That's the way I would sort of unwind at the end of my day. It's just, and the App Store is great, right? There's so many different options. So if I'm born with something today, I can always pick something else up tomorrow. And with the experience that I got in AR, VR, I just really wanted to leverage it in a different environment and wanted to see if I could go into something that I do enjoy doing, which is I enjoy playing games. So how could I get in? I applied to the games division for Disney and gave it a shot. And yeah, the rest is history there.
I love that you followed your heart and your interests. You made realizations. You're very self-aware for someone that was in college for like, you know, this might not be where I want to be. And then you bet on yourself and you made it happen. And wanted to ask Kelsey, AR is augmented reality. VR is virtual reality.
Yes. Yes. That is correct. Yeah.
So Kelsey, I wanted to take it back to something you said earlier. You mentioned art fidelity. That's a term that's new to me. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so in the tech space or in games or even with virtual reality or augmented reality, sometimes there are hardware limitations. And so you want to see something. So the top quality is usually what you see in film on movie screen, right? It's the best rendering that you can output. Due to hardware limitations, and then especially within games or if you're trying to navigate within a world, it still has to run. You don't want to have lag throughout the game or even in the experience that you're having because it's just it's uncomfortable, right? You don't want to see something sort of chopping through. So art fidelity is how well can we represent something in game or on screen within, let's say, a headset to its top quality while still maintaining the highest level of performance. And so that was, I think, where the biggest challenge was, because you just really want to produce something that looks really good on screen. And just to create that wow factor, you know, like the feeling that you walk into the parks and you see something for the first time, or you see an amazing scene in a movie that's just been beautifully rendered with the right lighting and textures and audio and all of those things. And so you're just trying to put that all together, but in this different art form, in this different medium. And so if specifically to gaming, you know, how you might optimize something for Switch is going to be different from PS5. And it all has to do with sort of the hardware capabilities.
Oh, that, you know, that is really good to know, because I definitely appreciate the gameplay, theatrics, the story setting. And we really see games at Disney as a way to tell more stories for the stories you already have, our characters. It's like a new way to get immersed in, you know, the Disney content. So I love the way you talk about that. Okay, I want to get into Disney Illusion Island. I saw some of the trailers. It looks so fun. Like, honestly, it's on my list for this weekend. I want to play it. You released it last summer, right? Tell us more about that journey, the creative process, and your role as a producer in that.
So I came on when the project was basically mid-production. The previous producer on that left at the time. So in terms of inheriting it, I was lucky. I inherited a really great project. I got to work with a really great team. Development team is Delala. They're based in UK, over in Essex. And so the team is really great. If you look at the art style, like that's one of my favorite things, the representation of it, to give Mickey and friends a new world to be a part of. So we created a world called Monoth. And in there, it's a 2D adventure platformer. You can play as Mickey, Minnie, Donald, or Goofy. Or you can play with up to 3 different friends, and each of you can be a different character. So that's really fun. It's a local couch co-op. It's fantastic for like the Nintendo Switch platform, because it's a sort of the target audience, right? That plays these types of games. And it was fun being part of something that was already established, getting to really enjoy what my previous producer had done with the team. And just, I was really lucky to get to be a part of it in a Disney way to bring it to launch. And I think that was just such an incredible experience, because Disney as a company has so many resources, so many support structures that are already in place, and it's just its own really unique experience. And I got to be a part of D23, which you have to say is very Disney, and it was so unique. And I've never been part of or included of in such a large presentation. And so there was a big hall, and it was going to be a D23 exclusive for attendees. And I got to present with our partner Nintendo and the CEO of Delala in front of 3,000 people. I remember when I walked into the room, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to take a minute. But it was incredible. Just the lighting, the support, my leaders were there. My leaders were there to support me. And it was just such a great atmosphere. And I think all I can say is I've just been very, very fortunate in my career here so far.
I've yet to go to D23, but I would definitely, like, that is such a huge achievement and amazing that you got to share. So I am curious, right? It sounds like there's a lot of collaboration and moving pieces to bring this together. As a producer, what does your day-to-day look like, and what is that role? Like, what are some of those responsibilities?
So at Disney, the way we're making games right now, we have some self-published titles, so Illusion Island is one of those. But most often than not, we're licensors within this field. And so a lot of the collaboration, we have internal collaborations, and we work across so many different teams. We work across creative, we have marketing, PR, business, brand, and there's just so many people that play a hand in it. Of course, your executive leadership. And on top of all that, you're also working with developers, the developers who are making the games in whichever different time zones. And they're just such an incredibly talented group of people. And we're very fortunate to work with some really top developers. And part of the day-to-day is really that, as you said, collaboration and communication. And that's just such a big part of the job. And it can range anywhere from setting up meetings to troubleshooting issues to trying to figure out if something is on brand or not. And a lot of what it feels like we do, we're also sort of brand ambassadors, right? We're representing the fidelity of our characters, how they're represented in game, along with the interactions that they have with the developers that we work with. A lot of our developers are, you know, have affinity for the IP. They know the IP. And so when you work with people who are passionate about it, it's just such a great journey. And, you know, we also have the opportunity to work with Disney character voices sometimes for different VO that happens in game. And that, I will tell you, that was one of the highlights of my career, just to be in a voiceover session with the talent and to hear the voices come to life, voices you've grown up on is incredible. It's something only Disney can give. And the people at Disney Character Voices are so talented. They've been doing this for years. And I love how all these people and teams and different groups come together to make a game. And that's my favorite part of producing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's like talking about the legacy and these characters that we're so many people are familiar with, have grown to love, right? And now being able to interact with the same character in a different capacity and different format. So Disney Illusion Island, I remember in the trailer, the settings are on a picnic and then finding some thieves, right? I believe. And it got me with the food. I was like, you know, food, I'm there. I'm into this game. I like it, right? How did you guys come up with the concept? I know you said you came in mid-process, but do you tell us a bit more about the inspiration around that?
A lot of the inspiration came from Castle of Illusion, I believe. It was an older Mickey game. And so there's a bit of Metroidvania influences as well. And so it's a lot tied to different platformers that preceded this game as well for development team and then also for our team as well. So on Delala's side and Disney's side and sort of coming together and seeing how could we make a Mickey version of this? And a lot of, so the conceit is, you know, they've been lured to an island and, you know, they thought that they each called one another. And it turns out that it didn't come from either of them. And it had come from Toku, who is the leader of these Hokans, where they look like really, really cute hamsters. and so they've been tricked there for a picnic and they think it's a picnic. But turns out, you know, Mickey and friends have been recruited to save the world of Mon-Off because these tomes have been stolen. And so you set out as either of them to platform around this really beautiful world. That is full of life in the background, lots of things to explore, and just continuing forward to explore and journey and just really enjoy the flow of movement within the game. And a lot of it, part of me, I actually really enjoy it as a multiplayer. I think there's a lot to be said about doing, you know, playing the same game as someone on the couch next to you, you know, nudging them over and just trying to get to a place together. And so that's what I personally always really loved about the format of the game.
What would you say has helped you achieve in this role? Like any past experiences? I know you talked a lot about a company gave you your first shot, but are there like some learnings that you'd like to share with the audience?
I think for me, I just really enjoy learning. I think when I graduated from college, if I could have been like, you know, in college forever, that would have been a joy. Just the amount of stuff you can take away from different types of classes. And so any time in my career is you just know that you're always working. People have done this for a while. There's always going to be someone who has something to share with you, to teach you and mentor you. And I truly believe that everyone is really willing to participate in someone else's life in that way and to really pass on what they have. And so I've always been interested in sort of learning from everyone around me. And not everything is going to jive with who you are, because sometimes there are fundamentals in terms of personalities and approaches and just how you approach a situation, right? Like some people are more gregarious and some people are more reserved. And so you pick things up that work best for your nature and also for your role. Throughout my journey, I think I've just tried to take bits and pieces that have jived well with me and keep those in my library of things to use in the future. And also just to be, it's a pro and con on this one for me, just to be introspective about certain interactions, you know, how have things gone? If something didn't go so well, what could you do better the next time? Can you go down a rabbit hole with that? Yes, you can sometimes for sure, but just trying to apply that forward, right? How can you do the next thing better than yesterday? How can you do it differently? And it's not always easy, right? It's also accepting failure. And I think sometimes that can be really hard, especially for me. knowing that you can fail and that it's okay to fail. And then because you did that, you can be better for it the next time. And a lot of it sometimes is also in your space, is being given the freedom to fail. And so I'm not sure if I'm fully answering your question, but it's a lot of different things, I think, that tie together, and finding the right people and applying it wherever you go. And so I hinted at the beginning, my journey's been really different. I've touched on many different things, and I just hope, in terms of takeaways, that's really it. Just don't think all experience, I think, is relevant is the best way I can put it.
I think that's such an awesome answer. And I feel inspired too, right? Because on a day-to-day, it's not easy to maintain that. So thank you for sharing your perspective. I know that's going to be helpful to a lot of us aspiring folks that want to go into the industry. And it's not easy to break into something new like this, right?
It is. And the industry, I know, is in a tough spot right now for the past 2 or 3 years. And it's, I hope it gets better. I know the trajectory has been really rough for games in tech. And there's no good answer. There's no straight path. And I think that's probably the most frustrating thing. Surround yourself with a good support group, with the right people. Try to do what you can, but also take those breaks, you know, take those mental breaks to replenish so that you're ready for the next round.
Earlier, you mentioned that you're also a Disney fan. Besides Disney Illusion, of course, what other Disney games do you like to play?
So maybe this is a little biased answer. So the other game that I've been lucky to work on is Disney Dreamlight Valley. But I am a cozy gamer, so I was really lucky. Like, when this project was available, I did want to be a part of it because I was like, I love these types of games. And Disney Dreamlight Valley is a great version of that. And so I actually do play that on my free time. It does feel like work some days, but it is one of my favorite games to still play. I'm also a Switch player. Like, I am that demographic. So that is the game that really jives most with me.
Actually, that brings up another question. You know, there's a lot of genres of games, if I can call it a genre, right? There's different types of games out there, and people have different gaming style. How do you, as someone who is a gamer, likes to play games, and also some on the creative side, this is your work in your industry, how do you create for an audience that might not have the same interest or gaming genre, I guess, as you?
Well, the good thing is we collaborate with lots of people. So you always have someone who can contribute best, you know, in terms of feedback when we get things that have affinity with the genre, know of the genre. So there's two parts to it. I think one is, if you don't have a strong affinity or knowledge of it, the first one is probably research. So playing games of the like. And so you understand the goals and the intent and the inspiration, and you try to apply as much of that as possible. And then the second part of it, I think, is user testing, which is to understand in X amount of group of people with, you know, this target audience, how are they responding to this game? What else can we improve on? How can we make it better? And so a lot of play testing is really important, getting different people's feedback. It's always good to have someone come in for the first time. And, you know, you'll see producers and people working on this, they're going to sit there like really quietly watching and trying to understand, okay, what did you like about this? Okay, what was great? How can we make it better? And I think that's part of the process, the iterative process, to keep building upon it, making it better, working on it, getting feedback, and just really being open to it, opening and listening, and definitely leveraging all the people who have experience in this and years of love and passion and building that back in.
Clearly, right? Because you were saying earlier, there's a lot of different games out there, and you could really work for any company in the world. So what brings you to Disney White? What is unique about this company and your role here?
It's similar to what I said in the beginning. Disney was always a dream for me. It was always a bucket list. It was always something I wanted to attain. It was always something I wanted to be a part of. To be a part of these IPs and characters that I grew up with, I just wanted to know what that was like. And so it was always Disney for me. Disney was always sort of my number one. And yeah, I think that's more of an emotional tie-in for me. I don't have any logical reason for why. It's just, yeah, it was part of my childhood. My siblings and I were all into Disney. You grow up playing, you know, the Goof Troop, all the different things. And, you know, the classic Lion King platformer, which is now actually available as well because of our catalog team. And it just gets ingrained in you. You see something out there, Disney, and you're like, ah, oh, you watch the latest movie and you're like, how do I be a part of this? How do I be a part of this team? How do I be a part of that company? And so for me, it was always Disney.
Is there anything you're excited about in the future? Anything you're looking forward to?
It's great. It's great to have, you know, Walt Disney Games on the roadmap like this. And, you know, with news and the announcement between us and Epic Games and what they're doing on that project and the world building that's happening there, I'm excited to see what that pans out. But along with that, we still have all the licensed games that we continue to work on. And we have some great content that's coming up that's already in works. And there's just such an arrangement of possibilities and availabilities for all the different types of gamers. So we're not just doing mobile, we're doing console as well, right? Like Illusion Island's on console, so is Dreamlight Valley. We have Disney Speedstorm, we have a bunch of integrations. And I think Disney's a unique place because we have so much content, we have so much IP. And the amount of reach that we can have with affinity with players is also really unique. And so I can't wait to see where we take it, building up our different genres, bringing in more of the next generation of gamers, like you said, and just having them grow up on some of the classic games that I grew up loving. And then, you know, in 20 years, I hear someone say, you know, a game that I got to work on and say, oh yeah, I grew up on that, you know, and that becomes their nostalgia piece. So that's the fun part, I think, about building something new, being a part of something, and then just seeing how it lands and then how it sits with people. And there's a fear of the unknown there, you know, but it's also exciting, I think, because you don't know what's going to come from it. And the possibilities are really endless.
I love the way you talk about your work, right? It's all about the storytelling. And I feel like at our core, everyone at Disney is a storyteller and adds that into their role. And you really represent that peace and the passion. And I'm just excited. I know there's not much I can ask about what we should be on the lookout for, right? I know there's things behind the scenes that we can't, but if there is anything you can share, like you would like our listeners, maybe keep an eye out for, we'd love to hear about it.
I know we have a few updates across projects, but I'm not as close to them to be able to speak confidently to it. So I'll just speak to, I think, Illusion Island, because that's the one that I'm working on along Dreamlight Valley. So at least for Illusion Island, we have an update coming up, possibly in the middle of this year. And so we're targeting to launch a quick update. So it's a little patch update. So if you already have the game, keep an eye out for that one. And then with Dreamlight Valley, we're going to have your favorite character, Cassie. Mulan's coming to the valley. So we have some exciting updates. I think with our games that are in live ops, what's really fun is you can continue to tweak and fine tune and really improve our games for the audiences out there. And so that's something that's really unique that I think we can do in games today that we couldn't do 20 years ago when it was burned to disc. So those are some of the things too that are coming up.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I'll be patiently waiting for all the updates and more news. But Cassie, I just want to thank you again. It's been such a blast talking with you about your role, the games. I could be here for hours, probably just picking your brain. But for the sake of our day, and I know you got a lot to do, just thank you for sharing all the knowledge and so openly and genuinely with our listeners today.
Well, thank you. You've been a great host. So I appreciate all of this time with you. Thank you so much.
If you like this episode, stay tuned for more and subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For a little bit more magic, be sure to follow us at Disney Careers on all social platforms and check out our open opportunities on DisneyCareers.com. We'll see you real soon. This episode was brought to you by Allie Fisher, Jaren Kaufman, Brenda Crumble, and John Hughes. Editing by Alexis Gonzalez-Flores and Megan Williams. Music arranged and produced by Nat Young Music Group Incorporated. Design and graphics by Weiling Zhang, and a special thank you to our Disney Consumer Products teams.